This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. Since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I hate going out in the storm. But if you really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. In the storm, but if you really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Let it snow, let it snow.
It's cold outside.
going to see you too.
Do what?
You
want
to do my sister?
Wassail to you as Christmas draws near. Wassail to you throughout the new year. Winds blow while fires glow to bring you good cheer. Wassail to you as Christmas draws near. Glad tidings to you. Hear the bells ring. Glad tidings to you. Shine all night, the message they bring. Glad tidings to you, hear the bells ring.
The program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music geared to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours.
It's 36 degrees in New York City. San Francisco is 55. It's 44 here in Houston. But don't worry, by Christmas, it'll be back up to the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
It's After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude.
On KPFT Houston, my name is Chris Harrison. I'll be your co-executive producer for this evening.
And I'm Jimmy Carper. I'm the other one.
Back from his dicking on the strand.
Yes, yes, yes. That's the way I bring in this Christmas season. My friend Lois and I go to Dickens on the Strand. We've been doing it for almost 20 years now.
And we scared her.
Even though she moved to Seattle, she sees no reason to stop the tradition, so she flies in for the weekend.
I also, you know, I told everyone you sleep with a woman.
Yeah, I did sleep with her.
Ew.
She is the mother of the young girl I was going to go to Seattle to see get married. The one who sends me Father's Day cards. Only I got,
and Mother's Day.
And I got sick and had to go to the hospital and missed it all. Anyway, we've got Ray Moores, who will be calling in about 5 minutes to tell us about something going on in Granbury, Texas. But there's a couple of items I want to talk about. First, the music. It's all the music you heard at the beginning of the show is all new to After Hours. We started out,
you can smell the newness,
with Janis Villas.
Pick a name.
From her CD called Christmas Card, and it's kind of nice. All your favorite Christmas songs done with a little jazz influence. That was Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow. And after that, we had Dave Hall, who we've played his music many, many times, but this is his brand new Christmas CD called Christmas. And we played the Coventry Carol. That's one of my favorites. And the third one is still over there in CD number 2, and that was a brand new single from
Corinne Curacao.
Uh-huh.
Wassail to You.
Wassail to You. Insane.
Wassail to You,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and the wassail you came in on. A couple of things that I want to get in before we get that call. Tonight, Sunday, this evening, is the PWA Holiday Charity Christmas Show. That's at the BRB. The show starts at 7 p.m. It's benefiting the clients of the Colt 45's Trouble Fund. It's always a festive event, and they hope to see as many people as possible. It's all for charity, folks. This is the Don Gill production, so you know it's a good, good show. He and Bob Boughton will be emceeing this show. So I'm going to be there, I know. So I'd love to see you there, too. Some things going on with the ICOH folks. Come one, come all. Everyone knows that you can't drink on Sunday before noon unless you have some food first. So ICOH would like to invite everyone to our weekly breakfast at Mary's, naturally. Serving will begin at 10 a.m. today. 10 a.m. and last until noon, or until the food is all gone. Something delicious is being served up by our majesties, Orlin Culliver and Ginger Vitus, with the helping hands of Mercury Emperor 13, Gerald McNeil, a.k.a. Chef Gerald, to you regular Sunday breakfast diners. Plates are $3 for a single serving or $5 for all you can eat. And all the money goes to charity. Now, ain't that a bargain? Oh, and our favorite redhead bartender, otherwise known as Daddy Rose Smith, will be serving cocktails and conversation at the bar. So,
be careful. Both of those are deadly.
Oh, yes. And if you you can't make that or don't get enough to eat, you can always stop by Tony's Corner Pocket, where Keys West used to be. Yes. And that's at 817 West Dallas, because from 12:30 until whenever, they're serving brunch. It's a down-home Southern with a Tex-Mex twist. Eggs fried or scrambled, ham with red-eye gravy, grits with cheese and chilies, and biscuits. So, You have your choice for food. We got you covered there. And we got you covered for tomorrow night over at the BRB for the PWA Christmas show. Don't forget, every Wednesday is the Jukebox Show at Mary starting at 8:30. That's always a lot of fun. It's been kind of a small turnout, I guess, because of the holidays, but it'll pick up. And next Friday, the 15th, Holiday on Uranus. It's a Monarch show being held at 8:30 p.m. over at Tony's Corner Pocket, 817 West Dallas. And the other thing I want to get in before we take our caller is that next Sunday, December the 17th, the place to be is the BRB again for a very cult Christmas. It's the annual Christmas show and community awards. The Cult 45s are doing this at their home bar, the BRB, at 2400 Brazos, at 7 p.m. with fun food, prizes, and a wreath contest. All proceeds benefit the Cult 45 AIDS Trouble Fund. And I mention that because After Hours is up for two awards. First of all, the Danny Villa Award, named after an individual who was in the forefront of people helping people with AIDS, given to a member of the community for their work not directly related to the Cult 45s. This year's nominees are Blanche DeBrie, Sona Alton, Jason Cryer, Rusty Rose, Lisa Veranda, and me, Jimmy Carper. And we're also up for the Golden Cult Award, given to a member of the community for their work directly related to the Cult 45s. And this year's nominees are Southern Country Houston, Don Gill, the Misfits Houston, PWA Charities, and After Hours at KPFT. So that is next Sunday. We're looking forward to that.
Thank goodness he didn't mention the wreath.
What?
I have spent more time than any gay man should in Hobby Lobbies this past week.
Oh, really? Why? Yeah. Looking for things to put on the wreath?
I've been looking for one thing specifically, and I can't find it. Well, I can find one, but, you know, $25 to put something in the middle of the wreath is a bit much.
Wow, when you're going to Hobby Lobby to look for it?
Yeah.
So it's not what I thought it was going to be then.
Well, yeah, I did find the gayest ribbon ever at Hobby Lobby.
Oh?
So strange.
Why is it so gay?
It's rainbow color.
Rainbow colored? Yeah. I have ribbon like that.
But, you know,
it's fabulous, isn't it?
Found it at Hobby Lobby.
Ooh.
I've been playing with so much ribbon, I've really, you know, I'm reaching my inner fag. Yeah. But then again, I'm also playing with batteries for this wreath, too.
I see. Ooh. Oh, you've got battery lights.
Yes.
Okay.
The cord just looks so tacky.
I do real lights.
Yeah. It's just the cord looks so funny coming out of there.
Well, no, honey. What you do is, you're hanging this wreath on your door, so you get one of those things, those brass things that go over the top of the door and then have a little holder for the wreath, and then you run the wire behind it.
Oh, see, this is going to be too perverted to put on.
You have, your inner fag is very shallow.
Yeah. But, you know, when it comes to the holidays, it's all about packages.
Ooh.
And speaking of packages, look behind you.
That's quite a package. Oh, an invitation from the Cult 45s.
Wow. Which I don't think you're supposed to be saying on the air because he keeps putting his finger to his lips.
I didn't want to be here and interrupt.
Oh, okay.
Last call, but you weren't here last week.
No, I wasn't.
I'm going to disturb.
And we already talked about.
He was just plugging himself.
Stephen
again.
Bunch, the president of the Cult 45s, has just dropped by. And he's saying, no.
Well, I gave the invitation for KPFT.
Thank you.
They're a nominee for the Golden Cult Award.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a nominee for Danny Villa.
Yeah.
And there's one for somebody else, so I won't mention Judy's name on the radio.
Oh, okay. She's at home on my sofa, probably listening.
And we hope to see those wreaths.
Okay. I'm working on mine. Oh, yeah. And I plan on taking one home with me, too.
Kind of like a bottle brush if you work it right.
Ooh. Oh, he's so twisted. That's why I love him.
You're doing a reading?
Yes, 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 yes. Actually, it's if it isn't mine directly, it will be G-cammed.
Ah.
Now, we've got someone on the phone.
We do?
Yes, we do.
That's why it's flashing.
Yes. Right, David?
Right.
Okay. Let's go.
No, you've got the buttons next to you.
Oh, I have to hit this button?
Yeah, push that one. Caller, you're on the air. Hello?
Is that me?
That's you.
Okay.
It must be Ray Moores.
Hello?
I'm here.
Yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing good. This is Ray Moore.
Yeah. I met Ray at a function I went to a couple of months ago. Same place where I met the Positive Voices Council. Yes. And Ray, why don't you kind of tell us a little bit about what it is you do?
Okay. Positive Voices Coalition is what we call our organization.
Yeah.
We are a standing committee of the North Central Texas Planning Council for HIV/AIDS consumers. As my card says, I proudly chair the organization. We proudly are representing Abilene, Fort Worth, Wichita Falls, a 37-county area in North Central Texas.
Wow.
If I get a little boastful, I'll ask you and your listeners forgiveness, and I assure you I'll ask God's before I go to sleep. But
I know you're up really late, I appreciate you doing this.
Quite all right. I'm told we have the third best consumers group in the country, third to New York City proper and Oakland, California, right here in North Central Texas.
That's pretty amazing. And, I mean, you're covering a huge, huge area, and a lot of it rural, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so getting the word out and getting help for these folks is really vital.
Well, I like to think so, and it's been my privilege to be well enough to be involved, and amazingly enough, it keeps me humbled and keeps me proud to have the support of the community, especially the HIV-infected folks, also the service providers in our area.
Yeah. So what is it exactly that the Positive Voices does?
Well, we meet once a month.
Yeah.
Consistently, we meet on the second Thursdays each month in Fort Worth. We have advocated for ADAPT, which happens to be my passion, the AIDS Drug Assistance Program.
Absolutely. It is the lifeline for so many people, me included.
Yes, sir, and myself included. Long story as short as possible, I became first an alternate member of our planning council in 1999, and was no doubt still looking for a glitch, but during that time, 1999-2001, I often was not well enough to participate even in our regular planning council meetings.
Wow.
I often had to bum a ride, or sometimes I would actually send desserts to the Positive Voices Coalition when I wasn't well enough to attend. In 2002, at our May meeting, not only did we learn that our then chair of Positive Voices Coalition had resigned his seat on the council and that position as chair of Positive Voices, but that 4,200 Texans were scheduled to come off the ADAP program January 1st, 2003. I found myself a little steamed in that this can't happen. I would have been, as dumb as I felt sitting at that table, I would have been one of the 4,200. And in July of 2002, I became chair. At that time, our organization was 13 in number, myself included. But I promised the group present to always be fair, be honest, and treat them like I wanted to be treated. The rest of that story, Jimmy, has become, for me, a love story. The support of the community and what we have achieved, we've made many trips to Austin to various rallies and functions, working with the legislators, letting them know our position, letting them see the faces of AIDS. In 2003, when we really began to rally around the state, the legislators, we were joined joined statewide with an organization called the AIDS Coalition of Texas, which no longer exists under that name. But we've been involved on the local level for ADAP, for keeping our consumers informed. Food pantries have been a major issue. I also serve on our comprehensive planning committee, which has worked really hard with allocations in North Central Texas, keeping our food pantries intact. I understand that we today may have the best ones in the state, as they tend to have gone away with all the funding cuts that we've experienced, not only in Texas, but across the country.
Yeah. You were talking earlier about when you first got involved with the group that you were sickly for a while, but I've got to tell the audience that I've met you, and you're really one of the most healthy guys I've seen.
Well, I appreciate you would say that, but most often I simply say to God be the glory, but the medications have worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was given a message early after my diagnosis, which I just observed my 9th anniversary, November 22nd, of my diagnosis of AIDS, and this is a philosophy that I live by, and I kind of preach it to those who listen. In order for a man or woman to survive, he or she must make a commitment to the medication.
Yes.
I can certainly tell my doctor and any who will listen that I've never missed a dose as prescribed. He or she must have a support system in place, and to me it doesn't matter if it's the organized group like Positive Voices Coalition, if it's just that friend that calls to say, how are you?
Mm-hmm.
And you need to give back to the community, and sometimes I have tended to OD on that portion. I have to really watch what I do, but I firmly believe if we who are infected are not involved, then we who are infected are going to be in big trouble.
You bet. And you talked about talking to politicians and keeping them aware of what's going on. That work is so important because those are the folks that can cut off the money.
Yes, sir.
Unless they know how much it's needed. And I don't know how they cannot know, because the infection rates are out there, and every time we turn around, they're talking about, you know, how many people are now infected and where it's going. It's now not predominantly in the gay community. It's in the ethnic communities, and so a lot of the organizations I know that are used to dealing with gay men are now dealing with a lot of straight folks.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's the higher rates of infection consistently run in our communities of color.
Yes, yes.
So I have also become very involved in that area of North Central Texas. Again, I guess by the grace of God that I was well enough, but one of the organizations that I was involved in early on that no longer exists was called Good Samaritan, and they raised money for our Healing Wings Clinic, which is one of the clinics here in North Central Texas, mm-hmm. which I am also a client of. But this organization was organized by a friend of mine who died a couple of years ago, and she became involved with our North Central Texas Planning Council. Her family raised a lot of money for this local clinic.
I cannot tell you how important it is for people like you to be involved in this fight. Because even our allies, our members of our GLBT family who live in big cities, don't realize what it takes for those living in more rural areas, how different it is, the different needs that there are. And I think you know what I'm saying.
Well, that's what I do.
So, hello, did we lose you? Ray? Oh, gosh, I think we lost.
Apparently we did.
I think we lost Ray. Damn. Yep, we sure did. Well, I hope he calls back, but he's one that he's an incredibly colorful character that that I met at the at a camp out that I went to, and the man is really, really involved, not only in the camp out, but in PWA stuff. Let's see if that's him. Ray?
Mister, I lost you.
That's okay. That's okay. I was just kind of filling in the audience about meeting you at the camp out and how impressed I was of your tunnel vision in the AIDS community and really getting things done.
Well, it's as I already said, for me it has become a love story.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to being recognized and coming on, I heard you mention the LVL PWA charities, and that's something else that our organization is very much involved in the fundraisers here.
Yes.
And we're already making plans for our spring fundraiser for the spring camp out.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
I'm talking to you on a cell phone, and I'm not sure what's happening, but I'm going to move outside and see if that'll help at all.
Okay, okay. Sounds fine from here, but you may be having trouble getting us.
Well.
There you go. Okay.
If I lose you, I'll call you back.
Okay. The other thing is, not only do you sit on this council and you do the behind the scenes work, but you're also out there raising money, because I've seen you on the stage performing.
That started as a tease a little over a year ago for the PWA charities, and no doubt I love to tell the story, but I do know one of the men who gave me a $20 bill. Unfortunately, I don't know the other one. But when I realized that men would give me $20 to do what I was doing on stage, and I said I could do this.
I want to let the audience in on it, Ray. You're a very masculine man. You know, there's, and so when he gets up on stage, he kind of does the impersonation thing, and seeing Ray in the wig and a dress just stopped you in your tracks, I'll tell you.
Okay.
But it also lets me know how far you'll go to raise money and to keep the organization going and raise money for other organizations in the AIDS community.
Yes, sir.
And that also is very, very important, because even just people going to a show, when they realize that you're raising it for an organization, for an AIDS organization, they'll maybe take time to learn more about that organization and maybe get involved, and certainly let loose of some dollars.
Well, it sure works. One of the facilitators of another deal that we have going on here is our Wall of Food show.
Mm-hmm.
And that facilitator is well known in North Central Texas and Fort Worth. But the current number this year in 2006, she has raised almost $30,000.
Wow.
For our local food pantry.
That's amazing. That is wonderful work.
And I do occasionally participate in that show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'll bet you bring in a tub full of money.
Well, I have so far, Jimmy, I've been successful at meeting the challenges. Some participants in the audience will give a particular performer a challenge, and if you don't meet that challenge during your regular number, then you have to do additional numbers until the challenge is met.
Ooh.
it keeps life interesting with Proud Mary is the usual encore number.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a wonderful number that brings them in. So tell me again, because I want to get an idea of how big of an area your group covers.
We cover 38 counties.
Mm-hmm.
But Fort Worth, of course, is the core EMA city or major city.
Right.
And we include the counties that surround Abilene and Wichita Falls.
Wow.
From North Central Texas.
That is a huge area. A huge area. And about how many people do you think you help out?
Approximately 6,000.
Wow. Wow. That's almost overwhelming when you think about it.
Well, we've got some rural outreach going, yeah. And our organization, the Positive Voices Coalition, is working with MHMR and mm-hmm. rural outreach.
Good.
And we are currently putting into position a needs assessment to be done early in 2007. And we're really looking hard at getting people into service that are not in service and keeping the services available for them. How discouraging it would be to find the individual who's infected but have to tell him or her that we don't have services available.
Exactly. Do you find that some of the problems you get in helping people is that they may be very closeted?
Yes. There's still a lot of stigma goes on in this area.
Sure.
As I'm sure stigmas exist throughout the state and, for that matter, throughout the country. But here the biggest obstacle seems to be that folks in especially the rural area don't want to be associated with anything that's associated with HIV or AIDS.
Exactly. So how do you overcome that?
Well, we just encourage the folks that they need to come on forward, and we continue working real hard to get the churches involved.
Ah, yes.
I mentioned my involvement with the Good Samaritan, which is African American primarily,
mm-hmm.
but it's been my experience that if the infected individual will go to his or her church, they are very supportive most times, but getting them to admit
exactly
that they are infected.
Yeah. Yeah, that may be the biggest challenge that you have, and that's a shame because the people need the help, they need the medications, they need the services, and if they're not willing to meet you halfway, at least it's hard to provide them.
Well, it's I most often refer to it as challenges and opportunities, but we got to get them to admit and step up and step forward.
Absolutely, and doing it through churches, I think, is probably a really good way of doing that.
Well, this year, World AIDS Day, which was, of course, December 1st,
mm-hmm.
we had the best participation that I've witnessed in my now 8 years of being really involved.
Mm. Amazing. Amazing. So what does the future hold for your organization?
Well, I'm actually asked some questions about that now. Like, what are we going to do in Austin in 2007? And that's something that I really don't know with our legislators going to be back in session, when we will be going and what we will be doing. But one of the things that I'm working really hard is to try to help other communities get involved.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited personally that in 2007, I believe we'll be getting a Positive Voices Coalition going stronger in San Antonio, where they took some major financial cuts, more than even we did in North Central Texas.
Wow.
As well as Bryan College Station and our folks in Abilene here and Wichita Falls, but we're also working with a group in Oklahoma City.
Mm, no kidding. Wow, good.
And I was excited this week to have the support of one of the drug company sponsors that they can help us out with food for getting these organizations up and running.
Good. That's wonderful work. That is incredible. And Ray, I'd like to have you come call back probably in the next couple of months and let us know how you're doing in 2007.
All right. I would like to stay in touch and do that, Jim.
Okay, good. And, of course, I'll see you in the spring.
All right, you bet. You got those dates down for that camp out?
I do.
Very good.
Thank you very much for calling.
You bet. My pleasure.
And thanks for being on After Hours.
Merry Christmas to you and to all your listeners.
Thank you. Same to you.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Yes.
The great guy that I met at the camp out, and he's really devoted his life to this organization, Positive Voices Council. They're doing such wonderful work. Let's go to a piece of music, and I hear Diane Rose is here.
She's right behind you.
Oh, well, then, yes, that confirms it.
So I'm playing this?
Yes.
Do I have to?
Yes, you do. Oh. It's brand new music by...
Danny.
That's right. He didn't leave his last name. And
Riddle.
I haven't heard this CD, but I know the piece that's being played, so you can't do it. You know, just play it, please.
This button.
Turn on your mic yet. I didn't even look to see which ones you're on. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, there you go.
Good morning, everybody. This is Diane Rose, and tonight we've got a great night. We're talking about gay adoption, and I happen to have sitting next to me a very good friend of mine that has been through the entire process and has a beautiful young child, Miss Anonymous. Yes, she's Miss Anonymous because we all want to protect our children, and we're not certain where the state stands these days on adoption. But she's here to tell us tonight about the process that she went through, so if any of you guys out there are interested in adopting a child, maybe this information can help you. So, Miss Anonymous, welcome.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you came tonight. What I would like to do is ask you a couple of questions like, well, number one, what made you decide to adopt a child?
Well, Diane, I guess I've always wanted to have children, and the way my life just went, it took a little bit of time for me to get to the step of adopting. I knew that I wanted to do an adoption. I just felt led that way, and I guess it was just a lifelong process, I guess.
It says maternal instincts kicking in.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't have those. I don't know where mine went. Although, the older I get, the more I'm feeling that way. I'm being very nurturing to my cats. But that's a lot of responsibility, though. You know, a child and responsibility behind adopting a child, that's some major stuff. I admire you so much for doing that. And being a friend of mine, I know she's going to be a great mother, too. She's got a lot of integrity. But, you know, being gay and adopting a child these days... It could be kind of tough. What kind of obstacles did you run into?
You know, honestly, orientation was brought into the process with me.
Good.
perhaps other people do go through that, but that wasn't really an obstacle that I faced.
Did they ask you on the application or anything? Or
no.
No.
No, it wasn't.
So.
You know, it, like I say, you know, I went through it years ago, so I don't know exactly what the state does now.
Right. How long ago did you go through the adoption process?
Oh, it's been several years back.
And what exactly did you have to do once you decided you did want to adopt a child? What was your first step?
There's a lot of things that you can do to go through the process. You can either choose to do private, you can do public.
Private and public adoption, what's the difference between the two?
Well, private adoption would be if you go through an adoption agency.
Uh-huh.
Public would be if you decide to go through the state. Or you can do international. So you have various choices.
So I can imagine how you would go through a private adoption. You'd go and look, do research on the internet and stuff. But how would you go through a public adoption?
Well, it'd be through the state, and you'd work through like CPS.
CPS.
And adopting children who have come from situations that, you know, those children were taken away from their birth parents.
Okay. They were not in the optimal living space.
Right. Right.
Okay. And which process did you go through?
I felt led to do that, to go through public adoption.
Good for you.
So
good
it
for
was
you.
Just something for me.
Yep. I adopted my cats from SPCA. I could have got a purebred, but who cares? They love me more.
They
and
do.
And that's why.
Yeah, sure. I bet they
and
do.
I saved a couple of lives there.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably did, too. So
well,
you've got a son.
Mm-hmm.
And how old is he?
He'll be going on 5.
Going on 5, and he was 2 when you adopted him?
He was under 2 when I adopted him. But you know, it's a good process. It's something that everyone who feels led to adopt,
mm-hmm.
you know, I really encourage them to do so because it's not as difficult as people might think.
Really?
Adopting children.
And it's good to know that that's not a question on the application that you fill out. You know,
mm-hmm.
going through the state, I would think that they would ask you everything. Did they come visit your house or anything like that to see if they had you had a livable space for them? Or?
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, there's so many steps that you go through. You sit down and you go through an orientation process, then you go through parenting classes, and then you go through a home study. You're assigned a social worker. It's a long process, probably start to finish for most people, anywhere from 6 months to 18 months.
Wow.
So
you're taking classes all this time, learning about how to raise a child and all that kind of stuff, I presume.
Right.
You know, it's a shame that everybody that doesn't have a child take those classes. I mean, you see people having children that are very young and surely don't have the experience or the world experience to know what to expect raising a child, that having a class would be best for everyone,
exactly.
regardless if they were adopting or not.
And also, truthfully, you're never, even if you have children, parenting classes can help you increase your skill set.
Yeah.
For raising kids. So just because, for those who don't have children, excellent idea. For those who do have children, excellent idea.
Like a continuing education.
Yeah.
Because kids go through different stages, too. I know I was a horrible teenager.
Horrible.
I'm still paying back my parents for that. Bless their hearts. But and I can only imagine children these days, with all the pressures around, are going through stages a lot more quickly than we did, per se, when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so much more, you know, involved, perhaps, than when we were growing up. So many other things that you can get distracted by.
Yeah.
So, I agree with you.
Yeah, and the information age and all the stuff that you're exposed to, and too many choices, quite frankly, to decide which way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is it everything you thought it would be?
You know, truthfully, it's more. It's been one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done in my life. I would say probably the most fulfilling. It's brought me the most joy.
Yeah.
And it's just, I just feel so blessed.
You are blessed. I've met her son. He is a gorgeous little boy. And you're very lucky.
Well, thank you. Thank
very
you very
lucky.
Much.
So right now, as it stands in Texas, it's not really illegal for gay people to adopt. It's sort of under the covers, I guess, where we don't really advertise it. However, there are some lawyers in town that can help us out and go through the process. Did you use any lawyers when you were going through the adoption process?
I did. I had attorneys myself. I highly recommend that everyone get an attorney because it just it helps you to know what the steps in the process are. It gives you a different perspective. And, you know, I really recommend private attorneys to do that. Attorneys who specialize in adoptions.
Right, right.
Sure.
And we could probably find that out by getting someone that was involved in family law, that kind of attorney. Mm-hmm. So, you know, check your Yellow Pages, or the Gay Yellow Pages specifically, and look for family law, and probably most of the attorneys in there would be knowledgeable on this subject. Through the entire process, do you have to go to court and sign a document, or do you go to like a mock trial where people ask you questions? How involved was the legal process on this?
Well, I guess basically you go through so many steps and so many procedures prior to getting to court. That a lot of that is taken care of before you get to court. Court's more of a finalization for the paperwork.
Okay, so it's just a formality, really, by that point.
Sure.
So in between the time you decided and approached the state, and what agency, CPS, as you say, you went through, did you get a trial run or a test drive, if you will?
Well, yeah, all children, at least it used to be years ago, have to be placed in your home for 6 months.
Full time.
Yeah, full time. To be certain that the bonding process is there between the prospective parent and the child. And so you have that 6 months that you're able to tell, you know, if this is the right choice for the child, you know, as well as for yourself. And it's a great learning opportunity. You really know more about what it's, especially if you've never had children in the past. You really, really know a lot more by the end of that 6 months.
And this is your only child. I know that because she's my friend. But she's my bravest friend, I might add. And she's very in love with her child. And anybody out there that's thinking about adoption, don't think you can't do it because you're gay. Number one, they're not going to ask you the question. Number two, there's resources out there for you. And it's possible. This is one person I know that is adopted. I know four other people that have, men and women, and it's available to everybody. Right now, there's a lot of controversy going around about, you know, gay marriage and all that stuff, which of course brings up gay adoption and, you know, people raising children that are gay. Currently, there is no law against that in the state of Texas. And since the Sodomy Act was overturned, I don't know if they're brave enough to even bring that to court. However, they did in Florida, and a couple other states are looking at it. But around the world, Guam is legal, Belgium, Canada, the United Kingdom, Iceland, the Netherlands, just last week, France, Sweden, South Africa, Spain, Denmark, Germany, Norway, the list goes on and on. As a matter of fact, you may have seen on the news where Cheney's daughter is adopting.
Yeah, I heard something about that.
Yep, so that's good publicity or where people know that gay people aren't so bad that we can't raise children. And they found in many, many studies that it has nothing to do with the child's orientation of being raised by gay or straight people. I mean, I was raised by a straight couple, and here I am, gay. So that's an orientation that is probably more leaning on the biological side than any other side. So after you went through this whole process and you finally went down to court and you signed the papers, was that the end of it, or is there continuing contact with CPS, or has the mother tried to, the biological mother tried to contact you, or anything like that?
There's a period of time that you go through where appeals can be made, and I don't know the exact length of time on that now.
Appeals from the biological parent?
It could be from It could be various reasons. That's something that when you sit down and you consult your attorney, that they'll give you, a real timeline on what the process looks like, what time the appeals can be made, whether it be by biological parents or by...
the state even.
Yeah, anyone. So you have to... You go through that, but that's really about the extent of it. You know, once that timeline passes.
So it was like 6 months after you signed all the legal papers and everything?
It seems as if it were, you know, 6 months.
So after that time, you can finally take a deep breath and say, okay, I'm safe. This is my baby.
Right. You can feel comfortable at that time.
Very good. It's amazing. Amazing. Any callers out there would like to call in? We're happy to answer any questions that you have and hopefully help you through the process. And after you do finalize the adoption, there's a lot of resources out there and support. There's an organization. Chris, what's the name of that organization that for gay parents? Is it Gay Parents Association, or what is the name of that organization?
Gay Parents. I'll see if I can find the website.
Yeah. I know that there is an organization out there that's strictly focused on gay parents, regardless of whether it's adopted parents or biological parents, but there's a lot of support out there. And I might add that Miss Anonymous here is single. She did this singularly and continues to do it singularly. So you don't even have to have a partner, per se, to have a baby.
As a matter of fact, the majority of children who are adopted in the United States are adopted by single
really?
Females. Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Single females. Interesting.
It's Houston Gay and Lesbian Parents. The website is hglp.org. And apparently we have a caller. So you'll need to phone your headphones so you can hear the caller.
Okay. You're on, caller.
Oh, not yet. Caller, you're on the air.
Is that me?
Yes.
Oh, well, Chris, you took my thing. I was going to say that was the Houston Gay and Lesbian Parents, and their phone number and website can be found in the Houston Gay and Lesbian yellow pages and in the Rainbow.
That's Big Roy calling and giving us some information on that. It's, HGLP, and their phone number isn't on their... website, but yeah, if you're on the internet, like I said, it's hglp.org. Thanks,
okay,
Big Roy.
All
right, bye.
Thank you, caller.
It's one of our regulars. He's usually here, but he's working now.
All right, then. Well, I'm sure there are people out there that are considering the adoption process, and it's a scary thing to go through. You know, you got to do a lot of soul searching to see if you're ready to make that kind of commitment, because it's not an 18-year commitment. It's a lifetime commitment. And like Miss Anonymous said, you have to be driven from your heart, from inside, instinctively. It's hard for me to imagine the instincts that someone would have to take that kind of job on. I mean, it's scary raising somebody. I mean, with all the crime, the terrorism, and the diseases and everything else,
mm-hmm.
aren't you scared to death?
Well, sure, you have a natural fear of things like you're talking about, but, I mean, you just look at all the people who have parents and look at yourself and everyone that you know, and you just know it's a natural process. And, you know, whether it's adopted or a natural child that you have, it kind of keeps it in perspective for me anyway.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess it all works out. I know my parents were, when we were growing up, were saying, oh, what's this world coming to? And they're still saying that.
Sure.
And now I'm saying it, too. I am my mother. But it is scary. Wow. So, and you have a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And during the day, who takes care of your son?
He's in a pre-care. And they pretty much take care of him during the day. And I have flexible hours, as you know, with my
mm-hmm.
job. So he's not in there for tremendous amounts of time.
Right.
And then, like most working moms, I mean, we have to either rely on that or schools.
That's right.
And it gives them great interaction with other kids.
And helps them build their social skills,
exactly.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I really think it's a great idea, to be quite honest.
Definitely. I'm at flashbacks of kindergarten right now. I didn't have that interaction. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and I had my sister to interact with. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, poof, I was five, and they dropped me off at kindergarten. Not a pretty picture. I was a little codependent at the time on my mother. That didn't last long.
Yeah.
And actually, I believe it or not, I was an introvert until I was in the 11th grade. I blame it on pre-K.
It's hard to believe now, knowing you, that you were an introvert.
I was. Well, I hadn't been socialized properly. You don't just take them and drop them off. A friend of mine that I work with now, her daughter is 2 years old. And they even have a graduated, you take them in for an hour a day the first couple of days, and then you take them in for 3 hours, then you take them in for five, and then you can leave them for the eighth hour. I mean, things are just, everything's changed since it was before, where we were just kind of thrown to the wolves.
Exactly.
So, and we've become more educated, you know? We know not that it's not a good thing to spank our children. Well, I was spanked. I'm telling you, I was spanked. It didn't kill me, but it hurt my feelings more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I watched Dr. Phil, and I know that you're not supposed to do that anymore. So that's a good thing.
That is a good thing. It's good that we finally understand that.
Really? It took a while.
It did.
Like thousands of years, but hey, better late than never.
I need to step in real quick so everyone knows that you're listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude on listener-sponsored commercial-free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org.
That was beautiful.
Sometimes I got to close my eyes and just go through it all.
Just like rolls off your tongue when you do that.
I just hope they don't add anything else to that list because...
Okay, callers out there, if you'd like to call in, you can dial 713-526-KPFT, 713-526-KPFT. If you're like me and you hate looking for the letters on the dial, it's 526-5738. We're here to answer any questions you might have about gay adoption, and we welcome your calls. So, Miss Anonymous, what are your plans for your son? Have you mapped out his whole life? Have you decided what he's going to be when he grows up? Or are you trying to keep that in check?
You know, you just love your child, and you let them make their decisions and their choices. You give them some guidance, and you just try to expose them to as much as possible and let them make the choices that feel best for them.
Yeah.
So, I have some dreams and some ideas, but... You know, I want him to find his own way in life, and I'll support that.
That's excellent. And I imagine, too, you know, speaking about the future, there's a lot of things that you need to get in place from a financial perspective to ensure that he does have a future.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think that means more saving because college is going up and up and up and up.
It is. And there's a lot of programs you can get into, you know, involved with right now to save money for college for your children. You know, I'm trying to think.
Now, the state had one.
Yeah,
it was very attractive. But I think they closed that off now. And 2 years ago, I know the Republicans decided that our colleges could raise their tuition, and they did so by 35%. And it's still going up.
Mm-hmm.
So, by the time your son gets to college, it might be, you know, $50,000 for a semester.
Let's hope not.
Really. And he's quite bright, so he might get a scholarship.
Well, we're going to hope for that.
That's
we're going
right.
to pray for that.
And, you know, I know it's kind of like not popular these days to work your way through college, but I did. And you can do that. So, don't let that scare you to death where... You don't think you could adopt someone because you can't afford Harvard. A lot of us make out just fine without Harvard and own our own anyhow. There's 16 states looking at right now bringing up laws against adoption, as they did marriage and adding that into their state constitutions. Thankfully, Texas is not one of those. But Florida just went through that. And it's being appealed right now, but it's not looking good because that's another Bush territory. Got another caller coming in. All right, caller.
You're on the air.
Hello, I just wanted to ask you a question. Was when you got your son, were you worried about what you might get? You know, because there's a lot out there that have had a lot of trouble. And what kind of problems did you have?
Well, that's a good question. You know, truthfully, I entered the process with an open heart and an open mind, and just knew that I would be able to, if it were something that was more than what I anticipated, there were resources that were available to me and to everyone who adopts that would provide help in moving forward and working with the child. So I guess that wasn't a huge concern for me. I just felt it would work out as it should.
And you also got to go through like a 6-month trial period, or actually had the final placement. So by then you would know, wouldn't you, I guess, that everything was fine with the child.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have a good understanding. You know what perhaps some of the issues were that surrounded the reason that the child was no longer with his birth parents.
Right.
And you do a lot of reading, and you do ask a lot of questions.
Yeah.
And you just seek a lot of support and just try to equip yourself as well as possible to help him or her through any issues they may have.
You didn't have to meet the biological parents, did you?
No, that wasn't an option.
Okay. So it's pretty much, and the biological parents have no idea who you are.
No.
So
no.
You're safe there. That's good. That's
yeah.
good. So it's pretty much anonymous. You're guarded by the process itself, and there's not a lot of risk on that side, regardless of the environment the child came from.
Well, and I really want to bring up, and I really want to stress, there's other options to doing public or state. I mean, so many people do international adoptions.
Mm-hmm.
So many people do private adoptions. And there's a lot less, well, it's just a different process. It's maybe, I won't say it's as strenuous as a process. It's just a different process. And the majority of the people that I know, they go through international adoptions.
Why is that? Why would someone choose international versus public versus state?
You know, there's a lot of reasons. It's a smoother flow, perhaps, if you go internationally.
Well, is it quicker or cheaper?
I don't know if it's necessarily quicker. It's definitely not cheaper, but it's more a situation where you're able to have more input into the process.
Well, I think, too, the thing that concerns me is a lot of people that go through international don't quite go through the screening process. And then when they get that child, you know, I think the screening process that CPS does is very valid and very good because it really looks hard. You have to list everywhere you've been and every state you've lived in, and they do background checks on you. And, you know, I think that's important. You go international, and, you know, none of that's done, so the child might not be the best.
And you hear the horror stories about, you know, those orphanages where the child has never been touched or hugged and doesn't have the capability of bonding. But I think that's probably the exception, I hope. I hope it is. I don't know. But I hope that's an exception.
And that's true. And even if that were the case, where children were exposed to that, internationally mm-hmm. speaking, you know, as quickly as you can get to those kids and adopt those kids, the better off they're going to be, because
point.
They're going to have love and that holding and that bonding that they won't get otherwise.
Very good point. But it amazes me. There's so many children here in the United States that need that love.
Mm-hmm.
That why would someone choose to go overseas?
I just think it's probably different people are motivated by
different things,
you know. Some people,
or
just,
maybe there's the misperception that maybe it's quicker or less expensive going that direction.
I think that perhaps it's maybe a misconception that it is quicker, because I don't think the process is any quicker. But I do think that it is perhaps less strenuous of a process.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also maybe that you can pick a little bit more what you want, because I think even though there's a lot of children that are in the adoption system here in the United States, a large number of them are either the older children,
right,
or the minority children. And so you do get some of these couples who, if they do want to adopt a Caucasian child, will go to the Eastern European countries, and where they can pick up a child in that sort of sense.
I see.
I think that could be part of it, is the fact that, yes, there are a lot of kids in the system, but, you know, the ones that are in the system aren't the ones that some of these families want to adopt.
Hmm.
And that could be just one of the points of where it is.
Yeah, and I've definitely heard that about the age of the child. I don't know what the statistics are, but once a child gets, say, 10 years old or even 5, it must be difficult for that child to be adopted at that point.
You know, I had a friend of mine I went to college with that adopted 2 children, one from Russia and one from Guatemala. And I'm a proponent of the system here in the U.S. And her and I have gotten into a lot of arguments about it. And she said it was the fact that when you go over there and you adopt the child, the average cost was $30,000 a child for in both cases. But when you adopt the child and come back to the U.S., it's yours. And she said it's not that way with CPS. Now, I don't know that for sure, but...
What's not that way with CPS?
Well, you've got apparently a 6-month waiting period when you go through the system.
Right.
That the mother or the birth parents could come back in. And the people that I've talked to, that I've known, that go overseas, they come back, and they go through the court there, and when they bring the child back, you know, there's no...
Right, no waiting period,
question,
per se.
No, and it's your child, so...
Yeah, but I agree with the 6-month thing. I think that's great for the child and the adoptive parent.
Well, I do too. And you hear horror stories about children that have been adopted overseas and it hasn't worked out for them too.
And then if it doesn't work out, you're kind of it's a hard decision what to do next. I mean, the overseas location is probably not going to take them back, so you would have to find another adoptive suitable parent or put them in a state institution, I would think. I don't know what you would do in that circumstance as far as...
Especially have the chance of bringing over, especially in some of, once again, the Eastern European countries, back in the days where, you know, they didn't have food to give the children. They gave them blood transfusions, so there was quite a few of Romanian AIDS babies.
Wow.
So at least you know that they were having some sort of birth defect or disease, but, you know, the fact that you've gone over there, picked up a child, and, you know, their health officials have signed off on it, and you get back here, and that child could have major issues that you don't know anything about that are going to come up.
Right. So it's very important that you have insurance, health insurance, for both yourself, anyhow, but definitely for your child. I don't know if your son was as clumsy as I was, but I was at the emergency room quite often for stitches for something.
Mm. Well, kids will be kids.
Will be kids. And that's a good thing, though. But insurance is definitely something that you should... I would think that the Child Protective Services or whoever the organization is that you go through would want to ensure that you had insurance, health insurance and stuff like that, life insurance, etc., before they allowed the adoption. Caller, are you considering adopting or have you adopted?
I've thought about it, and I went through the process with CPS, and I also, like I say, I've got several friends that have gone international. I'm not sure that I'm really there yet, but I might get there.
Yep. Well, it's a long soul-searching process, and I wish you the best of luck. Thank you, caller.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So, Miss Anonymous, I bet you got a big Christmas plan.
I've got a big Christmas list. Yes, I do. And I need to get shopping. Haven't been there yet.
It's kind of hard to find the time to do that between parenting, a job, and everything else on your plate. But I'm sure you'll find the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, and of course, he thinks Santa Claus, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Santa's coming.
Santa. It's definitely Santa. My nephew thought there was a Santa until he was 12.
Well.
He's a sheltered child. They live in a small city. And then I'm kind of thinking, well, maybe he's just playing us a little because he thinks he'll get more presents or something.
And that's a pretty smart kid.
He's a smart kid and definitely a player. I wonder why the other countries are so much more open to adopting kids and our orientation. They're not all hung up about that. But for some reason, in the States, we're all hung up about it. We're hung up about gay marriage, we're hung up about gays, and we're hung up about gay adoption. Now, all the statistics are out there. And none of it says this is good or bad. It's all neutral, just like a heterosexual couple would. As a matter of fact, with the training that I know Miss Anonymous has gone through, I would think the odds were much better as far as being a successful parent than a regular straight person that went to the hospital and had no training and maybe, you know, had no partner or maybe even knew who the father was or cared. But this way, at least, you're assured at some level you have the qualifications for raising a child, number one, because the adoption agency, whoever you go through, assures that you do before they allow the adoption, and the training involved with it. Is there any continuing training that you think that you'll go through? That, and if you did, would it be through the CPS organization or, you know, a college or seminar? Or
you know, It's like anything, I think, in life. You can't stop learning. And, you know, I read parenting books all the time. It helps equip me more with better skills. And, you know, as children grow up, you're going to need different skill sets to get through each stage of life with them.
Definitely. I guess they haven't written the book for teenagers yet. Everybody I talk to that has teenagers go, ah.
Exactly. Yeah, we're all thinking about that, those years. So, yeah, there's continuing education, but it's more an internalized thing that you do. And yeah. I imagine all parents, regardless of whether it's, you know, whether you're an adoptive parent or whether your children are a natural birth for you, you know, you really should spend the time to sit down and educate yourself. Yeah.
And when they're in school, you've got teacher conferences and PTA meetings and that kind of stuff. Sue Lovell on the show earlier, she's got, I think, 4 boys, and she's very involved in their lives. She coaches their baseball teams, and it's her whole life. She loves it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she loves her children, as I'm sure most parents do. But your whole world changes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, hey, I'm going to go play bridge tonight or play poker with the guys tonight. It's all about the child.
Yes, it is.
As it should be.
Mm-hmm.
So those of you considering it out there, keep in mind your heart has got to be 100% in that direction. And hopefully you won't have a lot of hassles finding a child that can adopt to you as you adopt to it. So I don't know who's doing the adoption half the time. Maybe the child is.
That's true. And, you know, there's a lot of different organizations. Even if you're not to the point that you want to adopt a child, you know, but you want to be involved with children and you want to help children, you can do Big Brothers, Big Sisters. You can do fostering programs. You can, you know, go to the Y and work with kids. I mean, there's just so many things that you can do to help kids if you're not ready to make that
on a part-time basis to kind of try it out. Yeah, that's a great idea, especially the Big Brothers and Big Sisters. They don't ask that on the application, I'm sure, if you're gay or is.
I don't know. Right now,
fostering is not illegal for us in the state of Texas. Hopefully, it won't be. It is in Florida, but not here. So, hopefully, we can continue on that anonymous track, at least have them keep us out of their hair.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's plenty of children out there. I know. I used to have a friend that was a Big Brother, and he spent every other weekend on a Saturday with a child, and it was very rewarding for him, very rewarding. But he was too busy and traveled too often to consider adoption, and he was single. So it was a perfect fit for him. Mm-hmm. And that's a great idea. If you like children, but you don't have the time to devote, there's plenty of organizations out there that you can get involved with and help both ways, help your need and help their need too. PFLAG is another organization that I think would be handy for this type of thing, especially during the process of adoption. I'm sure you could consult with them on others that have done it, adopted, and also what the process may be. But I don't think it's as scary as most of us think it is from a legality standpoint. It sounds like yours went pretty smoothly. Of course, it's a long process. It's not something that happens overnight. Mm-hmm. But you didn't feel threatened at any point or challenged at any point, did you?
Mm-mm. No, I really didn't. And, you know, I don't know if that's the norm. I don't know. Excuse me. I don't know. I don't have a point of reference for that.
Right.
But... you know, just my advice is just, you know, lead with your heart, and what will happen is going to be what's meant to happen for you. So.
That's right. And it happened for you. It was meant to be. Cutest boy in the world.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Very cute boy. And everything happens just like it's supposed to be, whether you want it to or not. Have faith, keep on the track, and you'll manifest it. Regardless of what it is, whether it's a child or a new job, a house, a car, whatever you want.
That's right.
As long as you focus on it, your heart's in it, it's going to happen just like it's supposed to. I definitely believe in faith, no doubt about it. So are you considering adopting any more children?
Not at this point.
Yeah?
You know, I mean, maybe down the road, but right now, no.
Yeah,
no.
Well, I would think one's enough to have your hands full, especially at that age. Five,
yes.
Going on 50. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's true. Five going on 15.
So, what are you expecting or anticipating about the teen years? I hear all these horror stories from people at work, and I know myself, I was not the easiest kid to raise. So are you making any preparations? Or, which I would think, I wouldn't make preparations, because then you're manifesting it.
Right.
Okay? So
right.
You got to be careful not to do that. But at the same time, you want to be aware of all the things that children are faced with these days in school. Drugs, crime, and gangs, and all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm. You do. I mean, you think about those things, and you try to minimize their exposure to it.
Uh-huh.
You know, the friends that I have that have teenage children say that really what they try to do is get them really involved in their school, in their church, in sports and activities that keep them focused and centered.
Yep.
And that's always a good place to start.
Definitely.
And spend a lot of time talking to your kids and really listening. Have a very open communication with them. And hopefully that if they do come across things that they shouldn't, that they'll come to you and they'll tell you. And then from there you can, you know, make a plan forward on how to minimize it for them.
All right, so some more like a coach.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
A lot of times you do that. That's part of parenting.
Yeah, it makes sense. And you know, you read studies and articles about gang members and they're bored. They were bored.
Sure.
They gravitate towards one another and either bored or don't feel the sense of security at home. So they form a group. So it relieves their boredom and gives them a sense of security. But if they're getting that from home and they're involved in their schools, sports or church or whatever, mm-hmm. then they don't have time or even think about it.
Exactly. Exactly. You just help them stay focused and things that they enjoy being focused.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, you can't make your kid like baseball.
Or algebra.
Nope.
But you can help work with them.
You can help work with them if they have to do it like algebra. But they don't have to do baseball. They don't want to do it. You know, look at what their talent is, I would think, of what they're driven to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I personally was driven to drums. My parents didn't want me to play drums. They wanted me to play piano. So I took piano and quit after a year.
Oh, you tried it, though, didn't you?
But I tried it.
Sure.
I tried it. But
the drums stuck.
The drums stuck with me, yep. I am still into drums. They finally gave up in sixth grade and let me do drums. And I like drums.
You've been doing it ever since.
Still doing it.
See?
Still doing it.
There we go.
You know, I heard somewhere or read somewhere that if a child is interested in music, it's best to start them very, very early, even though you can't take music in school until fifth or sixth grade. At home, you can play around with whether it's a toy piano or a horn or a flute, you know, one of those $3 flutes you can get at the store, whatever, mm-hmm. to develop that side of their brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read a little bit about the brain, and the child's brain, the way it develops, is so rapid
mm-hmm.
that they can pick up stuff. That's why they pick up, I guess, second languages so quickly.
Mm-hmm. It's really good to start them as early as possible in a second language or music.
How do you start them, though, when they're, you know, not even in school yet? Are there programs available for that?
Oh, yeah. A lot of the daycares teach Spanish.
Really?
And as a second language. And then, of course, you can have other different languages if you want to enroll them in that. But it doesn't start in grade school anymore. I mean, it definitely starts much younger.
Wow.
Which is great because, you know, as you're saying, young children can pick up so much faster.
Yep. So. Yep. That part of their brain is like major firing neutrons then.
Mm-hmm.
Or like neurons. Sponge. Definitely. So. I miss that part. I could never learn a foreign language ever. I can count to 10 in Spanish and I took it for 6 years.
Oh, wow.
But that's it. I don't know. I got to find some kind of hobby that exercises that part of my brain. I don't even know what part that is.
I know. I don't know what part it is.
What part is that, by the way? All right. You've got any callers out there, feel free to call in. We've got about 5 minutes left of this show, and we're here to answer any questions you may have. Miss Anonymous,
mm-hmm.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. It was honestly
doing a great job.
One of the best.
All right.
Well, I've got some Christmas music queued up for you.
All right. I love Christmas music.
Oh, you haven't heard this one before, I bet.
I haven't?
No.
Let's hear it then.
We're going to play a little Venus Envy.
Venus Envy.
Venus Envy. And we're going to play Rhonda the Lesbo Reindeer.
Well, I want to hear that.
This is After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude.
Dude, why you been out delivering presents to the little boys and little girls? I have been home riding your old lady, Mrs. C.
That's good.
Then how the reindeer loved her as they shouted out with glee. Rhonda the Lesbo Reindeer, come and hit the hay with me. Help me, Rhonda, help, help me, Rhonda.
No problem. Take a number. No problem.
Merry Christmas!
Rhonda. You're right, Chris. I had never heard that one before. But come to Rhonda. All right. That wraps it up tonight for the show. I definitely appreciate Miss Anonymous coming out tonight. And keep in mind, folks, right now we're kind of under the radar on adoption, and they're not asking any questions. It might be a good time to consider it. Don't tell them what's around the corner with all the hype going on about the gay marriage, but so far, so good on gay adoption. We're under the radar. So go for it, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you, Diane. Coming up next is going to be Gigi, and we had a song request, but we don't play this. We play Christmas songs, so I got a better one for him. The Go-Go Boys, you know it. You love their twisted kind of humor. It's time for this.
You better not try, you better not doubt, I'm telling you why. Chicken Hawk is coming to town. He's making a list, measures it twice, gonna find out whose penis he likes. Chicken Hawk is coming to town. You better not try, you better not doubt, I'm telling you why. Chicken Hawk is coming to town. He smiles and shows his dentures, he tosses you a wink, makes those suggestive gestures, and informs he's into. You better watch out, you better not try, you better not doubt, I'm telling you why. Chicken Hawk is coming to town. Here he comes. You better not try, you better not doubt, I'm telling you why. Chicken Hawk is coming to town. He bugs you when you're drinking, he'll quit if you don't partake. Sometimes he's so relentless, so just leave for goodness sake. So you better watch out, you better not try, you better not doubt, I'm telling you why. Chicken Hawk is coming, a chicken hawk is coming, chicken hawk is coming to town.
I would have played that last week, but, you know, with the hatchlings in the room, that would have just been wrong. And I don't do anything wrong like that.
Mm. No, no, never.
I loved it.
Ah, yes. Hey, you know who that was for. And if you don't, then...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Hey, did you hear about this, you know, they finally discovered why Dick Cheney had a lousy Thanksgiving.
Why is that?
The turkey was dry. Mary didn't return the baster.
Ooh. Oh. All I can say is, yeah, I'll bet the father is not David Crosby.
Stephen Colbert is claiming it's him. on his website, he supposedly sells his essence.
His what?
His
precious body fluids?
Yeah.
That's so much more than I ever needed to know.
But, I still can't get over this.
Yes.
This burger. I don't know how. I found it on this one website, a link from a one website. I see a Big Man's Road Trip.
Why?
There's this place in Arizona they're getting sued because it's like Hooters but with red meat.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of chicken wings, they sell burgers.
Oh.
And you either get the single bypass, double bypass, triple bypass, or, oh my God, the quadruple bypass.
It's huge.
2 pounds of beef.
How many patties is that?
Four half-pound patties. Wheelchair service is included. Their slogan is taste, worth dying for.
Ooh.
Their waitresses dress up like nurses.
You're kidding.
And that's why they're getting sued, is because the Arizona Nursing Association doesn't think it's funny that you're making Florence Nightingale into a whore. And instead of French fries, it's flatliner fries.
Mm.
apparently, they do allow you to smoke in the bar in this restaurant.
Oh.
So when you're going to be bad, add cigarettes to your meal. I mean, this is just, I mean, it's called the Heart Attack Grill.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, this
is... You can
is,
hear your arteries slamming shut as we speak.
Oh, yes.
I think probably the alcohol is the best thing, they got for you here. But, yeah, for those of you who are into the naughty nurses, there's a place to go.
Only if they're naughty male nurses.
No.
So, let's see, no luck in this department.
Mm. And let's see. While you're looking that up, I can tell folks that the Gay Men's Chorus of Houston's Gay Men's... Gay Men's Chorus of Houston is having their Home for the Holidays holiday show December the 19th at 7:30 p.m. at Jones Hall. Tickets are available. And our friend Marcy Ray.
Yes.
Sweet Mama Cotton. Is going to be performing at the piano and singing. Get this. Today, Sunday, from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Kroger's in Woodlands at Gosling at Research Forest Drive. Next Friday, the 15th, from 5 to 7 in Kroger in the Village, Buffalo Speedway at West Park. Saturday, December the 16th, from 12 until 2 at Kroger's in the Woodlands again.
You
yes.
know, when you play for a room of fat fags and their admirers, your career just goes downhill afterwards, apparently.
You end up at Kroger's, and she's doing this like almost every day at a different Kroger's until Christmas.
The reason
it's
for the
most amazing thing.
Yeah, the joke about that is she performed at Convergence for us.
She's wonderful. She is just wonderful.
Now she's performing at Kroger. Oh, yeah. Hey, you know, if she adds Feliz Navidad to her, maybe she can get in at Fiesta.
There
too.
You go. There you
Bump
go.
Bump the mariachis or the Zimfer, the pipe blower guy they had up at the front.
So the reason she's not playing at the Disco Kroger's is what?
She's not playing at the Disco Kroger at all. Evidently, the Woodlands really likes her. She's got quite a few dates there.
Wow.
And River Oaks and the Village has got her for and the Memorial.
Gee, Montrose gets stiffed and not in a good way.
Yeah, what do you know?
Well, yeah.
What do you know?
You can't get a piano in there, but around back you can find an organ.
There you go.
That was cute.
Yeah.
That was very good.
And December 16th, there's going to be a show at Tony's Corner Pocket, 817 West Dallas, to help celebrate the Christmas and support the PWA Holiday Charities. Miss Gia and her lovely co-host, Citrine, will be hosting a show to raise money and collect food for the needy. Bring your food items for donations starting December 1st. There will be a box there to collect the food. Then come and see the show on the 16th as we raise the funds for PWA Holiday Charities. Show starts at 7 p.m. and there will be some refreshments also. So grab a cocktail and enjoy the show and bring a few canned goods with you. Cool, huh? And also, another thing I wanted, I saw this on the table. I was there tonight because I saw Rach had a show. I don't know if you realize this, but I am third in line of secession this year. In this year's ICOH.
Oh my God, he's the Queen Speaker of the House.
Well, there's the Emperor and the Empress, and then there's the
he's Nancy Pelosi.
The Queen could become Empress. What?
The CPR is the Crown Prince and Princess Royale, which are second in command, and then there's the Imperial Prince and the Imperial Princess. I am the Imperial Prince.
Yes.
And Judy Reeves is the Imperial Princess.
Boy, have they got that one backwards.
So, she's in a wheelchair right now.
Poor baby.
Yeah. Because of her foot surgery. This was a Grinch show. They wanted no Christmas music. So we got up there, and I got her wheelchair up on the stage at Tony's Corner Pocket, which is a minor feat in itself, because the stage is about, 10 inches off the floor. So I got her up there.
I'm trying to come up with a 10-inch joke there.
And I was, she lip-synced, and I pushed her chair around, kind of dancey-like, and then turned circles and all that, and the song she did was Walking After Midnight.
These boots are made for walking.
These old Patsy Cline song, yes. And she's in a wheelchair.
The Return of P.T. Jr.
And when I was there...
Ooh.
He just left.
I need you.
You need me.
Mm-hmm. While I was there, there's this flyer on the tables for Opie's 22nd birthday bash. You know who Opie is?
Mm-hmm. He used to work over at EJ's?
He's a dancer, yes, with red hair. Really cute.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really cute. Well,
I wanted to return to Mayberry a couple of times.
He is now performing at Tony's Corner Pocket Friday and Saturday night. And he's going to have his 22nd birthday bash at Tony's at 817 West Dallas on December the 17th. That's a Sunday. From 6 p.m. until... Come and have some fun with alcohol and food. There'll be a 50-50 raffle, and the show benefits the Legacy. The old Montrose Clinic.
Yeah. Legacy Community. Yeah.
Door prizes and a great show. So.
Booze and food.
But we're going to be busy that night.
What? What am I doing on the 17th?
You're going to be over at the BRB, Colt 45s?
Oh, damn. Well, I could go. This starts at 6. I could go there early and then go over to the BRB.
Take your cell phone. We'll just tag in and out.
Good idea. Okay.
Hey. It's like old.
Oh my good boys are here tonight.
Yeah.
Most of your bad ones.
God. Well, yeah, his bad boys are a whole different collection.
They're all chained up in his dungeon at home.
There you go. There's not enough room for a dungeon in his home.
How about a swing?
Hey, we're still doing a show here.
Oh, yes, the show. Yes, we're doing a show. And in fact, it's Gigi's segment right now, and we're well into
grabbing
it.
Grabbing and stroking and hugging and
yes.
Well, that's the kind of thing Gigi likes, but usually Gigi likes to be involved
subject,
in it.
Like,
oh, stop. She's you're turning me on. Something came in the door, sorry.
So.
Yes.
Yes.
I've got to find some appropriate Christmas music for Gigi.
That would be good.
Like Bell Jingling, play Bell.
Oh my God, Chris is thinking. Beatrice.
And so while you're doing that, I'm going to tell you about the Pride Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Little article in this month's Outsmart that just came out.
What about the Pride Committee?
And as we've already talked about on this show, Jack Walensky has resigned, executive director. Yes, he has.
And Nick's no longer president.
And Nick Brines is no longer president, but he is staying on in a volunteer position.
Carol Wyatt's new president.
Yes, Carol Wyatt, who was here last month
this week.
What? Last month.
Last month, this week of last month.
This week of last month.
Diane Rose.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She has assumed the office of president of the Pride Houston Board and of directors after Nick Brines, longtime Pride Houston president and volunteer, stepped down from that office. The Pride Houston website, www.pridehouston.org, is currently carrying a public survey to obtain community input regarding moving the annual parade, which commemorates the July 1969 Stonewall Rebellion, to an autumn date. Pride Houston board members are also considering moving the parade to a downtown location in 2008. So perhaps you would like to go to www.pridehouston.org and tell them how you feel about that.
Can I register my opinion without the website?
You may, but it would be more effective if you,
Hold
did.
Hold on a second. Let me turn on the 7-second delay for that one.
Oh, yeah. No,
no, there won't be any. You won't. I only have two words to say about about moving it downtown. Like hell.
I know. I'm not too thrilled about that either. A community feedback session is scheduled for, get this, Saturday, January the 13th at 1 p.m. at RMCC Church.
Oh, my.
That is the Saturday.
As far as moving it, there,
it's also my birthday.
You're going to be in Hawaii.
Actually, I'm not. I'm not. Stanley has a court case in mid-January, so if we go to Hawaii, it will be in February this year. Next year. Yeah.
It's still cold here and nice and tropical.
Oh my God, the universe hasn't closed in on itself. He's not going in January.
He didn't go last January.
Or the January before that. It will be 3 years this January since I've been there.
Hey, I can fill out this questionnaire next month differently.
I'm afraid to ask.
Just depending on...
Did you go to Pride Houston?
Hell yeah!
Okay. What's it asking?
How old are you?
Well, great. What size? What are you wearing?
That's the next question. Gender. Ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
What is your home zip code?
He's filling it out.
I'm sorry. It's just insane to me.
Okay, let's get to the question. Many but not all cities celebrate Pride in June to commemorate the Stonewall Riots that marked the beginning of the gay civil rights movement. However, we all know in Houston it's hot in June, and some warm climate cities have moved their Pride festivities to a cooler time of the year. How important is it to continue celebrating Pride in June?
Very.
Ding. In questions 6 through 11, please let us know if you agree or disagree with the statement made.
You know, it's hot in June, too, but, you know, we don't move the 4th of July celebration to the fall.
No. Mm-hmm. I would more likely attend a Pride Houston festivities if it was held during a cooler time of the year.
No.
I would most likely attend a Pride Houston festival if it was held in a park-like setting rather than a street festival setting.
No.
No, because people bring their dogs to the parks, and then we'll have to be stepping through dog crap. I'd rather step through bum crap. Thank you.
The questions are thinking about moving the festival to areas around, in the parks around City Hall.
Yeah. So that we can spend, spend the $10 to get in
to
walk
park.
Around.
Yes.
Improving the quality of the Pride Festival. I wonder who's calling. Is it Walensky? Someone from the Pride Committee listening in going, what the hell is he talking about?
It's important to shorten and improve the entertainment value of the Houston Pride, or the Houston Pride Houston Parade. Even if it means that some of the smaller community groups may need to share a float, or perhaps participate in Pride via float at the festival rather than in the parade.
Hung up on them.
It's important to shorten.
No, there wasn't anybody there when I picked it up.
Okay, let me throw in my two cents. You know how you shorten the parade? You take those, I don't know how you call them, the marshals, or the people out there with the big stop-and-go signs, and you get rid of them. Because they put in these stupid artificial gaps, and then have you speed up at the end, so, you know, someone like me who's a wheel monitor, you know, is having a hustle their butt down the road there. Where was
I? Our group has been two city blocks behind the people in front of us for 3 years now.
Yeah. It's important to
because of the way
I disagree there. I would support. Oh, what, we got a caller?
It's Big Roy.
Oh, Lord. Do I have to?
Yes, you do. Hello, Big Roy.
God is near.
Hello.
Hello, dear.
Yes, Chris, you have to.
No, we didn't.
Moving the Gay Pride Parade to the autumn makes about as much sense as moving the 4th of July celebration or Juneteenth.
There you go.
You know,
hey,
I
you
think
know
the
what?
Reason why that even comes up is because of a lack of education as to why it's held when it is held.
That's right.
I mean, every year during the Gay Pride Parade, there is absolutely nothing about what happened at Stonewall. There's no entries about Stonewall or anything like that. And it's a failure of the Pride Committee to educate the people in our community. That's the way I see it.
I love that. One of the questions I have in here, I don't mind paying up to $10 to enter a festival as long as the quality of the entertainment vendors' attractions is high.
Right.
Okay.
Has it been?
No.
You know, this past festival there was not... I mean, I paid to get in this year, and I was disappointed.
Oh, I love the history tent.
The air conditioning was lovely.
There was a long... I missed the Pride Parade this past year because of my hospital stay.
Right.
People... But I got nothing but a long list of gripes, groans, and grievances about how dull things were this past...
I'm sorry. I know these people put on the, you know, they put on a big event. But, you know, I bit my tongue last month. there was blood on the table from me biting my tongue when they were talking about this last month. Yeah, let's move it. Yeah, move it downtown and do this little circular thing. Well, you know, I'm sorry. In my mind, the way you're talking, we can't get one parade in a straight line to go off without a hitch, without all these gaps. They want to do technically four parades going in a circle. we can't coordinate that.
And you're going to get a bunch of queers going straight in a straight line.
Well, that's what we got going down the street now. And I mean, I'm sorry, but you know, the people who have worked on this parade for all these years to get it to the point. You know, I've been a participant in them. I have not, done any volunteer work with the organization.
And, you
but
know,
the fact of wanting to, the idea of taking the stuff out of there, you know. I mean, they're even taking the meeting out of the Montrose. They're going into the Heights to go up and do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we're losing so many things, you know. Next, you know.
I don't want to bother them with details, but moving it to fall in Houston is no guarantee that the weather's going to be any better. It was 85 degrees through
I mean
90 degrees through most of October.
Hey, guess what? You know, it's cold on January 20th in Washington D.C. They still do an inauguration. They still do a parade.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things that go on with this stuff.
Thanksgiving Day parade up north, they still do it no matter what. Yeah.
It downpours.
The mummers just pump it a little faster.
That's right.
They have the balloons knocking down the street lamps.
There you go.
They don't yank the balloons off of the Macy's parade up in New York. They lower them down so they're closer to the ground so they don't kill anybody.
That's a sorry argument, moving it to the autumn.
And, let's say, they do that in Dallas. Yeah.
They call it the Ross somebody parade, too. Freedom Parade.
Yeah, the Ross. And also this, the parade in Dallas, if I remember correctly, it's run by the Dallas Tavern Guild.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the bars. So, maybe they do allow a little bit more than, our... yeah, but they don't have as strict of a dress code as ours does, or any other stuff. I haven't been up to Dallas and all that, but, if we take this away from our community, we had that great thing. We were the first city to do a pride parade at nighttime in the Western Hemisphere, in the Northern Hemisphere, in the United States, all these things.
And it's incredibly successful.
And if you take this and you move it down to where everyone else does, guess what? You move it to downtown, you sure as hell aren't going to see the TV stations fighting to cover it. They're not covering it now. The rodeo parade comes down, you got two stations broadcasting the same damn parade.
Mm-hmm.
Just different points in the parade, they're sitting there telling you the same stuff. They're not going to cover us anymore. The only station that covered the last Pride Parade is now defunct.
And you're going to have to pay to park.
You're going to have to pay to park, mm-hmm. where some people here, you can, it's going to cost even more to get your water because you're not going to have any stores to go into to get it. So you're going to get gouged there even more. It's bad enough when, the city did it to the Montrose Street Festival, kicked them out of here, and took them over and killed them on Allen Parkway. We don't need government killing us. We're committing suicide for our pride parade with this thought. So we can shoot off fireworks? Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah.
I don't need fireworks.
Let's go to a piece of music.
I'm sorry, did I get on a soapbox?
Well, we're going to be talking about this. Yeah. I hope every week.
Where did that soapbox come from?
Every week until January the 13th. But Gigi has a segment that she wants to do.
I couldn't find the song. I was trying to find Temptress.
It's in there.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Okay. Well, I love you guys. Y'all be good.
Bye. Goodbye. Goodbye. Good riddance. Bye-bye.
Oh, yes. Well, while you're looking for all that, we'll be doing a segment on healing sexuality after we come back from music break.
Yeah, once we fix them. Hey, we were talking about Hawaii. She's got a Hawaiian Christmas song.
Oh, yeah, do that. Melody,
let's do that. Alrighty. Someone who has spent more time in a bathhouse than Jimmy.
Yes, believe it or not.
And probably she's been in more recently, too.
And someone who was raised in Hawaii.
Bette Midler came out with a Christmas CD.
Yes, she did.
She's wearing a poinsettia on her head.
And she does a duet with Johnny Mathis, which we're going to play, too.
Yeah, considering the fact you've already played that song once tonight.
Okay.
You've already played Let It Snow.
Yes, I know. I opened
all right, so let's play something else.
Millie Kamaka. Melee. Kamikilaka, which is
Mele
Kamikilaka.
Hey, I got an idea. Bet, what the hell's the name of that song?
is a wise way to say Merry Christmas to you.
Melikalikimaka is the thing to say on a bright Hawaiian Christmas day. That's the island greeting that we send to you from the land where palm trees sway. Melikalikimaka is a wise way to say Merry Christmas to you.
Melikalikimaka.
That's a peppy little number.
Peppy. That was the Pet Shop Boys with It Doesn't Often Snow at Christmas. The Beach Boy song, I love the title just alone. The Man with All the Toys.
Doesn't often snow at Christmas. Except, of course, if you're inside South Beach.
That was off the Elton John's Christmas Party CD. Yeah, a couple other gave. Rufus Wainwright's on it. Elton sings a couple songs. But had to play that one. There's a little something peppy. Before that was or something like that. I left my coconut bra at home.
I think mine's still at the cleaner. So pick it up.
Those must be some coconuts.
Yes, they are. Thank you very much. This is After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude. Listener sponsored. I have to say this so the FCCers don't get pewed. You're listening to After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude. Listener sponsored. Commercial free Pacifica Radio for the Gulf Coast. KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, 89.5 Galveston, and always the World Wide Web at kpft.org. As we bring the sleigh ride in for the end, it's Gigi.
Yes, back again. Tonight I wanted to talk a little bit about living in about what a sex-positive environment is and the sex-negative culture we live in. You know, we grow up in our culture and we're told no on anything that's sensual or sexual. We live in a touch-deprived society. And we get into this kind of weird messaging. We're given all this kind of prick tease through advertising and through many different sources, and then told, no, you can't do it.
Yeah.
And it even gets worse. You know, you find someone, you're interested in them, and then you get slapped down. You're either too old or you're too young.
Tell me.
I grew up thinking, oh, when am I going to be old enough? When am I going to be old enough? And then I was too old. It's just this weird kind of paradox.
My problem is that I'm too skinny for some chub chasers, and I'm too fat for some twinks. So I don't bother with either one. It's like, whatever, you know.
We're too much this, we're too much that. And in a sex-negative culture, there's so much emphasis, but just purely on the physical.
Outer physical, right?
Yeah.
So I wanted to bring this concept, and I've been a part of it in California and through the bi movement, this whole concept of a sex-positive environment where each person is worshipped and honored for the person they are. And it's not just physical beauty, but also the spiritual beauty and this concept that the body is the temple of the soul, spirit within, and taking a whole different approach to sexuality and sexual expression, and honoring each type of sexual expression between consenting adults. And taking a whole different approach. One of the things that I brought up on this show many times is that how important touch is to us. And
absolutely
human
essential.
Infant
absolutely
will
essential.
Die
yeah.
without human touch.
Yeah.
For adults, I think it's critical to mental health and physical health. And yet we get so little of it. except in the deep throes of orgasm that has to happen in 5 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, some. You know, we've taken it to the extreme of personal spaces don't touch me at all.
Right. Uh-huh.
And
yes.
It's like, how did we get there? You know, I mean, how do we do that? How can you? I come from an Italian Irish family. Us not touching each other in some form would be nearly impossible.
I come from a Hispanic family, and touch is, you know, it's essential to our communication.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit odd for some people when, you know, it's like, well, why are you being? It's like, well, it's how, you know, it was raised. I know one night I met a straight boy, and I was going to give him a handshake goodnight, and he's like, oh, no. He gave me a hug.
Mm-hmm.
I was totally not expecting it,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I tell people all the time, first time you meet me, it's a handshake. Next time, expect a hug. You're just going to have to deal with it.
You know, and Arch, I come from a very uptight, Catholic, Slavic background. And people, we didn't touch. Mm-hmm. There was no touching. I did not discover the joys of touching another human until I was out in the gay community.
And oh boy, did he indulge himself after that.
Oh, did I?
And to some extent, I think you bring something up really good, because I think in the gay and lesbian community, we tend to be much more positive in our approach.
Absolutely.
And in the bi community.
There's much more hugging and touching in the gay community.
And self-touching. And
with a lot of my straight friends who are gay friendly,
yeah.
Straight but not narrow.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hugging and stuff, and these straight guys, you know, it's just a matter of touch. It's not a sexual thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't I get a gay boy like this?
I know.
Oh, that's a lovely thing right there.
Well, yeah,
speaking of touch.
He has a little brother.
Jason,
now.
Are you molesting Marlon again?
Yes, he is. And I'm not stopping him in the least.
Shorted groupie love.
Yeah. And part of what, you know, I run the Temple of Aphrodite, the sacred sex temple.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I see is that people come in and it's like, it's especially when it gets to erotic touch, that becomes so taboo unless mm-hmm. it's within the confines of socially prescribed
some kind of context.
Mm-hmm. Context.
Yeah.
And when you start breaking down these walls and opening the door to erotic touch,
yeah.
It can be so healing. And that's part of what a sex healer does, is work with erotic touch to heal some of the wounds and to bring about this kind of healing process, to open up the erotic channels within the body again and make us whole.
Yeah. Mm.
For some reason in our society, we're supposed to be kind of some type of schizophrenic that's separate from our bodies and mind, and mm-hmm. there are two different things, and sexuality is way, way far away from even those two elements. And somehow you're supposed to integrate them in one moment and then the rest of the time cut it off. It's like, no wonder we come out a little bit damaged in the sex negative culture. You know, it's like we're running around and we're being bombarded with all these sex messages and with all this prick tease and mm-hmm. advertising and our little
dicks
get hard and we get turned on and then we're kind of spanked and shoved back down for it.
Yeah, no tongues.
Oh, speaking of getting spanked and shoved back down, Jimmy loves that, right?
I do. I got into it.
I know for a fact that. And there are two things on my mind along this line, is that, one, I know that there are a lot of people who, because of my so-called disability,
mm-hmm.
don't come near this. They see this and they go, oh, he's disabled. They don't have sex, do they?
Yeah, exactly.
They don't touch, do they? They don't do.
Same way with anyone who's overweight.
You know? Or in the HIV community.
Or in the HIV community.
Yeah.
Or and older.
Or older, straight, yeah.
And the other thing along that is that I know that for me, he was just over here doing the massage thing and everything, that was all nice and everything. But I know for a fact, for me, that I have even now, at the age of 38, the lower somebody touches me on my body, the more sensitive I become about them going anywhere near me.
Oh.
I am, because of the disability I was born with.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm very sensitive to people discovering anything below a certain, you know.
Oh, really?
Unless we are very intimately connected already to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, the idea of letting a stranger know what goes on from here down, physically.
From here, where down?
From the waist down, okay. Or from the rib cage down, yeah. So to speak. Because, you know,
in the crotch area.
Yeah. And even in the back, I mean, it's just because of the spina bifida, well, let's just face it, things don't look, you know.
They look different.
They look different. I have a lot of scar tissue. I have a lot, you know, it's just. And so, on some level, I know that I'm very sensitive about being touched there by somebody.
Have you ever been groped?
Yes.
Did you like it?
It was unnerving at the time. It depends on
you
who
liked
it is sometimes. I mean, it's like, it's very unnerving because it is, whether I tell them or not, it's in my head, it's very unnerving because it's like, oh my God, they're going to find out something. You know?
Well, they're going to see the real me.
That you're not Jewish.
Yeah.
Well, I think you touch on another point that I wanted to bring up.
Because I am circumcised.
Oh, wait, you are.
I wanted to bring another point into this, and that is that the other thing I see is that when we do finally give ourselves permission to become sensual and sexual with another person, all of a sudden it becomes very goal-oriented towards achieving the big orgasm.
Yes.
And we kind of cut off most of our bodies, and it becomes way over genital-focused. Mm-hmm. And we forget about that, hey, the whole body's erogenous.
Absolutely.
And we forget to play a little bit with the entire body.
That's right.
And we just zero in on
the crotch and
the crotch and getting it off.
All those
other fun places.
And I like to kind of throw this out to each person here.
Mm-hmm.
What if you could go someplace and work with a sex healer where they spent 3 hours raising central energy through touch in your entire body?
I'd love it.
And even allowed you, if you wanted to reach an orgasm, but that wasn't the main focus.
Okay.
But to really just enjoy being touched, being able to give them instructions, saying, oh, I want it a little more rough here or gentler here, and I want you to rub this nipple a little bit more and focus down on the space in my toes. And, and really get into the full body work.
Is this kind of along the lines of body electric?
Yes. To some degree.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about sex healing and opening the whole body back to eroticism, not just the genitals. And a lot of men don't realize, but when you stop focusing, well, actually, I'd like to say two things. First, orgasm and ejaculation are two different things.
Oh, absolutely.
Most men in our culture think they're the same thing. And the second thing is that once you start refocusing on the entire body and quit trying to focus on just achieving a ejaculatory orgasm for men, all of a sudden you can open up and start experiencing multiple orgasms without ejaculation. You can experience full body orgasms without ejaculation, and then you can experience some ejaculation along with it.
Yeah.
But it's like all of a sudden this whole new realm of sexuality can open up. For women, a lot of women are not able to ejaculate because of social conditioning.
Sure.
You know, the guy sticks it in, gets it off, and she's kind of like, oh, I just started to warm up. And they ignore the rest of the body, and then all of a sudden, the way the design is that if you take a little more time and work certain areas of the body in the female, a female can have ejaculatory orgasms. Mm-hmm. And what's a little bit different for them is that because they've been denied it for so many years in our culture, it's like all of a sudden this wash of emotion comes with it.
Sure.
And it can be very healing. I think it can be very healing for men when they experience their first non-ejaculatory, full body, multiple orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
And how many in this room have had that experience as men?
I see one hand raised. Yeah. It's yours. DG, it's yours.
Yes. And I'm talking about utilizing some breath work with this and some tantric techniques and learning more about our bodies and what we can accomplish. And all of a sudden, we can open a whole new realm in sensuality and sexuality.
I have this sneaking suspicion that if I involved myself in something like that, there'd be a very long crying spell involved somewhere there.
And sometimes that happens.
And I've had those experiences myself where I just bawled like a baby, and then I've had other experiences where I started giggling uncontrollable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, at one time I had a lover that said, "What's wrong with you, Gigi? You okay? You okay?" I said, "Oh yeah, I'm fine. I'm having the experience of my life. You know, don't interrupt." But we're so afraid of seeing these emotions come out when we start opening these doors. And it's not like I want, when I'm in the throes of tears or giggles or sometimes all, who knows what other emotions may come up, all of a sudden I'm reaching this sense of catharsis with it, and all of a sudden it's washing clean. I'm opening that Pandora's box, and all of a sudden these things I've been stuffing in, which we tend to do in a sex negative culture, comes out, and I'm free of it. As long as I keep stuffing it in and keeping that lid shut, it's like a boiling pot inside. And so I think that's where the healing comes in, is when we can cry, and I'm glad you brought that up, or we can get the uncontrollable giggles, or we can start. Sometimes I've even had one experience where it was during a BDSM scene where all of a sudden I got in touch with this anger from some of the things that had happened in my past. And it wasn't that I needed my lover to do anything except just be there. I didn't need him to stop me. And so part of the healing process and part of what a sex healer does is allows a person to experience this and still be connected. And through eye contact and breath work again, you can develop this incredible healing and cathartic experience, and all of a sudden open the door to your bodies to where you can experience a fuller sexuality.
It's funny because my friend, his idea of a hookup is, you know, being thrown around and ravished by some hot guy, whereas my concept is being close to someone, being intimate with someone without sexual contact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a totally different concept. He does not understand that. You know, he understands being thrown on the bed and being ravished, and I understand that really you have to have some kind of intimate emotional connection before you can really have that. There has to be
some spontaneity. Actually, I think both can be true. I've had both types of experiences. I once had, I wouldn't call him a boyfriend. We took showers together. Mm-hmm. We cuddled in bed together.
Right.
But we never had anything sexual. Except that, you know, I'd feel his heart on against me once in a while, or he'd feel mine against him. But we never took it into a actual sexual mm-hmm. level. Neither of us ever orgasmed. But we both needed that nurturing.
Yeah.
So here comes the part where I turn into a Star Trek geek and because of what I was just mentioning about my physical issues, in Star Trek, the most intimate thing that two Vulcans, or a Vulcan and a human who are mated to each other,
mm-hmm.
do is that finger touch thing where it's just their fingers gliding along each other, and mm-hmm. and to them that is a very intimate thing that is only done between two people who are really connected to each other. To me, on some level, when I think about that, I think about that with another person, that because of my issues on, you know, getting that close and people seeing my body and stuff, the idea of being able to be that intimate with somebody without having sex, without having, you know, intercourse, you know, is an amazing sort of thing to me. It's like that level of intimacy, that level of touch is just so intense and so
And I've also experienced the exact opposite, where I've gone and had nominous sex, you know, just to get the rocks off, and that can be awesome too at times.
You know, and for me, it used to be because there was some thrill, but now really I find the thrill is more in the hunt when you're out on the scene versus when you're in a more controlled environment, mm-hmm. say a bookstore or a bathhouse. It's more, I usually would say it's more thrilling to be out in almost like an, you know, open area where you can go and find a person,
mm-hmm.
you know, either for the night or, you know, who knows how long.
And I think we're touching on something that I think seems to permeate our entire culture, even in the gay and lesbian, and that's when we start bringing in this concept of normal.
Mm.
Everyone has a different concept of normal, though.
And guess what? If you take a real look at the definition of what is normal, it's basically a statistical analysis. It means we're within the bell curve, the largest number of people fit. Mm-hmm. And exhibit these types of behavior. Here's the illusion. When you do a scientific study, all of a sudden there's some people that can't answer surveys. There's some people that won't answer surveys. Mm-hmm. And so what you get is not what is normal, because you haven't tested a sample of the total population, it's skewed. So whatever normal is, we don't know what it is, because all the data is skewed.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So whatever is normal in human sexuality, we don't know what it is. We don't know what it looks like. And we haven't tested certain populations, like people with MR or people with certain coma conditions or people with any number of things going on. Mm-hmm. We test one little sample from the smaller group of the whole population. And so it gets further and further skewed. So whatever normal is, we don't know what it is.
No.
Because you have to really get into the definition of normal, you have to sample both. Take a random sample of the entire population, and we never do that.
Kind of normal is, on some level, what society right. Says they is normal.
Normal.
No matter what it is they're actually doing behind those closed doors, mm-hmm. because society, you know, history is replete with the idea that there's a lot of societies who say this is what they want, this is how it is done, go ahead, take a peek behind those closed doors and see if that's what's happening.
But, right. Well, not only just that, but we're also talking that I think you touch on this sense of we don't even look cross-culturally. Hmm. And once you start doing that and you start looking at what's going on in other countries,
right.
and in other cultures, all of a sudden what we consider normal mm-hmm. is not normal at all.
Yeah.
And even in some European countries, there's a lot more sexual freedom than there is here because mm-hmm. we are a puritanical Catholic society.
Exactly.
You know.
And so this is part of the sex negative conditioning we receive growing up, and part of the healing process is to break some of these taboos and open the door to creative sexual expression between consenting adults, and also to open the door for consensual sensual expression between consenting adults. And sometimes those can be separate things. Sometimes they can come together.
Yeah, I was just on the phone earlier today with somebody who has since moved away. But I could go a lifetime being with this person in a relationship and it not have to be sexual.
Yeah.
It could be intimate in a thousand different ways with us never having sex, and that would be just fine with me, because, you know, it's just this person has had quite an effect on me in the short time this person was around. And it's just,
you know. That's not to say that sex shouldn't be part of it.
No.
I think many that's the beauty of, I think, kind of starting to develop a sex-positive attitude, is that it opens the door to so many different possibilities. Mm-hmm. And it opens the door to a much deeper, closer relationship, or the potential for deeper, closer relationships on many different levels, not just sensual, sexual, but emotional and even mental.
Yeah.
Where we can explore and touch and reach and heal and grow together.
We get so much, no, you can't.
Yeah.
No, you don't. No, that you can't do that with that person.
That's not right.
And it sinks into our heads like such incredible brainwashing.
DARE programs in schools. If you tell someone long enough that something is bad for them, or something is bad that it shouldn't be done, 9 times out of 10 that person will go and experiment with it, if not completely get into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either whether it be drugs, sex, alcohol, whatever, you know.
And of course they'll take the worst route to get to
some do.
You know.
And I think that's where programs like Body Electric and some of the other work I do in the sex temple is so important, because it brings education to people, and it also opens up this healing process, this way of saying, and also challenging some of our own beliefs and some of the things that we've been told, like, well, no, he's too old for you, or he's too young for you, or this or that. Mm-hmm. So many... Oh, what's the word I'm looking for?
Biases.
And social conditioning. Just this whole sense of creating more taboos. And what is a taboo? It's a kind of social pressure.
socially unaccepted.
That's never based in reason, never question, or seldom. It just is.
Yeah.
But
in our again, you know, we have at least one person here who is over a certain age, and
yes.
and if that person suddenly decided to have a boyfriend who was 18, you know, even within our community, you know, that.
So
I'm 38, yeah. And people would look at me like I'm insane, mm-hmm. if I had an 18-year-old boyfriend.
Yeah.
You know? We're conditioned to say, no, that's not. It's like, well, that 18-year-old's an adult. You know? I mean,
yeah.
It's mm-hmm. not that I've ever had an 18-year-old boyfriend,
Some reason, when an older woman pursues a younger man, the tables are completely turned around.
Yeah.
You know, it just, it's odd, the inequality in that.
Mm-hmm. Or an older man finds like a 30-something, 20-something girlfriend, and everybody goes, oh, isn't that cute? Mm.
Something I wanted to bring up is that, because I'm a toucher. I like touching people.
Mm-hmm, me too.
And I find that there's a very fine line between friendly touching and erotic touching. And I don't even know myself when I cross that line.
When someone gets gooey.
If things start to get hard, you know, people are getting wet.
A person that you consider a friend, and you know, you're hugging or touching, and when does it turn from just,
I think,
the nurturing touching into erotic touching? Are there certain body parts that you have to touch before it becomes erotic? Or
I think it's more a matter of focus and intent.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it this way. We all walk down the street, and our clothes are rubbing our crotch. Our crotch is moving around. It's mm-hmm. getting stimulation.
True.
But it's not sexual.
That's true.
It's not sensual.
Yeah.
It's when we start focusing in on it, and then we start having the intent, and all of a sudden we start rubbing it. We can rub it the same way we do walking down the street. I can walk down the street in a certain way where I'm getting very sexy in my walk,
mm-hmm.
and I'm rubbing it and really get turned on just from walking down the street.
Wow, you're easy.
Actually,
are you new here?
Actually, it takes a bit of training to get to that level.
So you've trained yourself to be easy.
Actually, to kill him later.
Yeah, what's your excuse?
Well, I mean, no. I understand. You've got to get your train. You know, you know, the traffic, you know, you got to be able to turn so many clients on. So it's got to be quick.
He's okay. Not good as cute as I would have to kill him.
Yeah, I know.
Oh.
Good old PT.
Mm.
But wait a minute, you know, is necrophilia against the wall?
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm going to be stiff.
Only the priest can beat me like that.
I think Jimmy kind of brought up something, that is, when do we cross boundaries with someone that's platonic versus someone that's a lover?
Mm-hmm.
And
or
a
love interest.
Or love interest. And that, once again, comes down to having very open, honest communications. Being able to communicate to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's, you know, it's like one of the rules we have in temple is that you ask before you touch.
Yes.
Ask permission. Yeah. Is this okay if I touch you in this way?
Mm-hmm.
Is there places you don't want me to touch you?
Hmm.
And, you know, we're not accustomed to doing that. That's a sex negative kind of thing.
Sure.
Keep everybody in the dark. Don't ask those kind of questions. You can't communicate on that level.
You ruin the mood.
Yeah. One of the things I've done with boyfriends and girlfriends, and I even train, teach people in temple and outside of temple, is learning and developing new types of communication. And it doesn't always have to be verbal communication. One of the exercises I do is I'll have them masturbate in front of me while I watch, and I'll do the same for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll take it the next step. I'll have them use my hand to masturbate themselves and do the same, having them use, being able to use their hands to masturbate myself. And all of a sudden, I'm communicating all this information, how I like to be touched. They're communicating a lot of information on how they like to be touched, and all of it, and showing me, and I'm showing them, and all of a sudden, this communication opens up. And we can even put it in verbally. And I think that's the next step. But because we've been so bombarded in this sex-negative culture, sometimes we don't have the language, or maybe sometimes we're a little too fearful to say, oh, I want you to touch me like this.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, and I think even in the... I remember years ago, I had a boyfriend that liked to screw me very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd just lay there and take it and think, oh, I'm in pain, but this is what I'm supposed to do. If I say, oh, go a little gentler at first, you know, he might not like me anymore. So we put a lot of our own self-worth into not communicating. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy almost.
Sure.
The less we communicate, the more fearful we become of communicating.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think on some level we also have this idea, we almost have a Hollywood TV idea of how a encounter is supposed to go, which is you know, you know, they're both just supposed to know exactly how to touch each other, where it's all supposed to go, and who's where it feels good here, and you know, you never see these two people doing that and discussing it with each other in the movie.
Exactly.
They just go at it, you know, and
we're supposed to somehow with no sex education instantly know when we come of age and have our first lover how to become a really good lover with no communication whatsoever.
Well, the thing I've learned
is that kind of paradoxical.
You can't just sit there and not communicate. Mm-hmm. Your body language is constantly talking. You can sit there and be stone, you know, stone still, but your body language conveys everything.
Yeah. If
you know, we teach
your lovers paying attention to your body language.
School teaches math and science and English and all of those things, but we're just supposed... And sex is, you know, unless you're just, you know, doing it to go at it and not have any feelings attached or anything, but, you know,
the pure physicality.
Yeah, the pure physicality of it, you know... You don't see a lot of classes in how to get it right and how to make and get the most out of both people involved, you know, or more, depending on your particular situation.
Yes.
You know? I mean, and I think that's crazy because it's sex. There should be somebody telling, you know, there should be more Dr. Ruth Westheimers in the world, you know.
Or more sex healers in the world.
Yes, exactly.
And sex healing should be something that's not considered a form of prostitution, but something that is an acceptable, legitimate profession.
Yes, I agree.
There was a rather short-lived TV series, Firefly, and there was one character on there who was... I guess they called her like a courtesan in the show, but I mean, what she did for a living was a legal profession. It was part of society's way of, you know, dealing with certain sexual issues. I mean, she had intimate relationships with the people, and she got, you know, and this was her job. This was her profession, and it was a legally recognized thing. You know, here, you know, you go to some desert town where there's, you know, one place in the entire United States where, you know, it's kind of okay. but it's still looked at like it's some freakish thing, you know? And I think the world would be such an easier place to live in if, you know, that was when they're talking about sex education in school, more than just the mechanics were involved in the conversation, you know?
More than
just the basic mechanics.
Well, just learning how to warm up the body. And it's kind of like, I know that there's times when if someone went just down on the head of my cock, cold, it's like, whoa, too much, slow down. But if they took some time to warm me up erotically first, then all of a sudden they can go to town, you know.
Oh.
Or even anally. Same thing. You know, it takes some time to warm up. Our bodies aren't designed for just stick it in and get it off.
We can train ourselves to be that way, but
believe it or not, not even when you're 18.
But even when you're 18, you're cutting yourself off.
Sure you are.
You know,
you're focusing on the orgasm rather than sex.
And on,
it's like the carrot on the string, right?
Yeah. And, you know, the thing that I hear a lot is that, you know, people get into sex for a while and then all of a sudden it becomes this routine and it becomes like, well, shouldn't there be more to this? And I guess this is part of what I'm bringing up tonight.
Okay.
Through this healing process, this is how you find the more to it. It becomes so much richer and fuller when you can become fully sensual, sexual, and a whole body sense.
Wow. When are you going to hold these classes? I want to go.
Oh, it's going to be coming up soon.
Okay.
I'm designing some a series of classes on human sexuality and sacred sex.
Yes.
And it'll be 8 3-hour classes designed to help people get more in tune with their bodies, with communicating, and with even some anatomy, work on how to work with the spiritual side of sexuality. It'll be quite a phenomenal class. I got the outline for all 8 classes completed. I should have the rest of the class, you know, be able to finish the graphics and the detailed information probably within the next month and a half.
Okay.
So I'm looking at probably mid to late January to mid February before I'm ready to do the classes.
That's good to me.
But it's one of the things that I want to do as a sex healer is provide, if nothing else, information about our bodies that we've never been educated about. And about our spirit and about our way of communicating with our partners what we want. And being able to honor our partners and hear what they want.
Yeah.
And it is about honor and respect and love and deepening our relationships.
Cool.
Because if you truly do honor and respect the other person, you are interested in where they're at. sensually, sexually, all of those things during the course of an intimate encounter, you know.
But it's also...
It's not just about you, the thing, you know.
But it's also honoring and respecting yourself, too. Hmm. I'm not looking at making people into sex martyrs that have to give all to their partner. And not receive anything back. It has to be a two-way thing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it becomes unhealthy.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
And I know
we
we're getting very...
Yeah, we're getting close to the end, and I want to do a couple of more songs before we get to the top of the hour.
And we got mail to talk
and
about.
And Laura Palooza, we do have mail to talk about. So, let's see here.
So, you've been listening to After Hours, and... Gigi's new segment on sacred sexuality.
Yes. Yes, you have. How about a little Leah Delaria? That's a little short tune there from the Broadway Cares album. And we will be right back.
I hear those sleigh bells ringling, ting, ting, tingling too. Lovely weather for sleigh ride together with you. Snow is falling and fogs are calling. You poo. Lovely weather for sleigh ride together with you. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, let's go. Let's look at the snow. We're riding through wonderland of snow. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, it's grand. Just holding your hand. We're gliding along with a song through a wintry fairyland. Our cheeks are rosy and comfy cozy are we. We're glad to line together like birds of a feather should be. Let's take the road before us and join a chorus or two. Lovely weather for sleigh ride together with you. It's lovely weather for a ride with you. It's lovely weather for a sleigh ride with you. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, let's go. Let's look at the snow. We're riding through wonderland of snow. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, it's grand. Just hold your hand. We're gliding along with the song through a wintry fairyland. Our cheeks are nice and rosy and comfy cozy, are we? We're gliding along together like birds of a feather should be. Let's take the road before us, join our cars or two. Lovely weather for a ride with you. They ride with you. They ride with you. They ride with you. They ride with you.
Christmas is the
light shining from above. Christmas is the time, the perfect time to show your love.
Richard Foltz. That was
Patrick Arena doing
Richard Foltz's song.
It's his compilation.
We got some letters.
And the name of it was
Christmas is the Time.
Mm-hmm. Before that, we had Leah Delaria.
Oh, it was Delaria. Rhymes with Hilaria.
Okay. Doing
Sleigh Ride.
Yes.
I love that song. It comes from when they used to play it at high school.
Oh, yeah?
At our high school, they it was always the most popular song. They played it every year.
Oh.
And so, you know, the orchestra comes out and mm-hmm. they're playing, and the person comes out with a little clip-clop xylophone thing.
Yeah.
And two 2x4s with handles on it.
Yes.
That makes the whip sound.
Oh.
By smacking them together.
No kidding.
And the one person comes out there with a sleigh bell and holding it in their fist, and they're just smacking it with the palm of their hand, like getting ketchup out of a bottle. For those of you who remember when ketchup came in a glass bottle.
Yes, I do. Letters.
We've got letters. Don't worry about signing all that paper.
Me, I like jolly old St. Nicholas myself.
And a fabulous Christmas card.
We got a Christmas card from...
Jaime. Yeah.
And I got a Christmas card from Tigger.
Oh.
And Tigger sent us a letter. He sent us stamps.
Ah, good.
And it's a very short letter. He had hurt his shoulder.
Oh.
And he was having to write with his left hand.
I do that every day.
Yeah, because you're not in your right mind.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, actually, you are in your right mind when you're in your left hand. very short note on that. And okay. Another one. Let me see, what name do we call him by?
While you're looking that up, I want to talk a little bit more about Jaime's card, because it's got a lovely pink triangle with wings on the front. It says After Hours and a rainbow. And hope all the After Hours crew is doing fine and having a great time. I'm still listening to you guys every week, and I missed hearing your voice last week, Jimmy. But hopefully you will be back this week. I am looking forward to it.
He doesn't
hope
get
you're all
on
enjoying the holidays.
Bobby Lee is a listener who hasn't heard us in a while.
Oh, really?
He's probably... didn't hear we're back on Saturday nights.
Ah, okay.
So we'll drop a note out to him. Yeah, we're getting here to the end. We'll start putting up in the background here.
Yeah.
As I mentioned last week, kind of a little tradition, unfortunately. Doing it for too many years here on After Hours. When we do the Christmas songs in December,
yes,
we usually have been ending with Melissa.
Okay.
Singing John Denver. Boy, that was wrong.
That is
John
so wrong.
Lennon song.
Yes.
And
Merry Christmas, War is Over.
Well, and hopefully one day it'll be true.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be nice?
We all hope that.
This is After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude. Coming up top of the hour is Laura Palooza.
Ah, yes, and she is here and ready to bring you all of that wonderful music that you look forward to listening to from her. Every other
Happy
week.
Happy holidays, folks.
If you could say that with just a little less emotion there, Merle.
And until next segment.
Yes.
Have a good one. And don't forget, Orgasm Day.
And you just never know when Gigi's going to be on the air, because she kind of floats around, you know, from week to week, month to month.
I think anyone that listens to the show long enough knows Gigi just floats around.
I do.
Take us away, Melissa. This is KPFT Houston.
Stop all the fighting. Have a merry, merry.
AFT is seeking a few smiling faces to help around our offices. Prospective office helpers would lend a hand answering phones, tackling administrative tasks, and greeting the public as they come through the door.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.